Welcome everyone to the November briefing session. It being the allotted time, I'll declare this meeting open at 2 minutes past six. As you may know, the briefing sessions occur a week in advance of the council meeting. This briefing session is not a decision-making forum, but rather an opportunity for councillors to ask questions and seek further clarification on items listed in the agenda. Kaya Marman, Kaya Yoga, Kaya Bridie, Yananuk, Nalak Karij Winji Alak Nini, Nalak Karij Nidja, Budja Bal, Wajak Nunga Budja Lalak Nini, Kura Kura, Nijie Buruman. On behalf of the town of Pasadena, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land on which we meet, the Wajak people of the Noongar Nation, and pay respects to their elders, both past and present. I'd also like to remind people that our meetings are recorded and uploaded to the town's website. We'll move on to attendances and apologies. We have an apology from Councillor McWilliam. Do we have any other apologies? No? And we'll move on to declarations. I have a declaration, a speculative interest declaration for item 8.1, which is a declaration of interest where I do not have to leave the room, but on the advice of the CEO, I will leave the room and ask the Deputy Mayor to come up and preside over that item. Are there any other declarations? No? We'll move on to announcements. I've got one announcement. I would like to congratulate Deputy Mayor Renee McLennan, who has been selected as a finalist in the City Power Partnership's National Climate Awards. These awards recognise the work of local governments paving the way to a zero carbon future. We are the only West Australian council to be shortlisted this year. Deputy Mayor McLennan has also been selected to speak and share her thoughts on climate action with the audience at the City Powers Partnership Awards tomorrow afternoon. More information is available on the town's Facebook page. I have no further announcements. I don't believe there are any petitions. So we'll move on to public question time and statements. There is 15 minutes allocated for addressees by members of the public on matters contained in the agenda. Each member of the public with a question is entitled to ask up to two questions before other members of the public will be invited to ask their questions. Questions can also be submitted to these briefing sessions in writing prior to the session. Statements, each person is restricted to one statement of up to 2 minutes unless the council by decision determines that they may speak for no more than a further 2 minutes. Statements can also be provided in writing prior to the meetings. So I'd invite any members of the public to come up to the microphone, state your name and address, and ask your question. No members of the public. So would any member of the public like to make a statement? Statements. I don't believe there are any deputations at the moment, right? So with that, we will move on to reports, and I will ask the Deputy Mayor to come up and preside over item 8.1.
One, as you know, is the social housing economic recovery package, and it's proposed that council apply for a grant through the Department of Communities. Mr. Gibson, do you wish to speak to this item, seeing as it's already been on the agenda previously? Anything you'd like to add? Are there any questions, councillors, on this item?
Is that as it presently stands, or is it intended that there may be an alternate?
So you might be aware that I have circulated an alternate motion, which was essentially not to pursue this grant and instead investigate future opportunities within the town centre. The staff this afternoon provided a couple of comments on that. Would you like to, excuse me, would you care to comment on the alternative proposal?
Through you, Madam Deputy Mayor, it's certainly open for council not to pursue the grant on the basis of not revoking its previous resolution as it applies to the Hamilton Street site. I note from the reasoning given that would potentially support the amendment is that it cites the location of Hamilton Street or the Hamilton Street property relative to the town centre, and it might be a bit disparate from the town centre, and that may be a reason not to support the application. I suppose to that I'd say there is no, it is open to council to lodge the application, and the Department of Communities would determine the appropriateness of the location for social housing. So it's not necessarily something that the town needs to deliberate over, because the Department of Communities will do just that. But like I say, it's certainly open for council not to pursue social housing on the Hamilton Street site.
So just before there are questions, I should probably amend the reasoning submitted, because in addition to that, there have also been concerns raised by councillors about the lack of information that's able to be provided because of the timing of the grant and so on. So I'll add that in as a reason as well on this location. Do you have a question?
Concerning these grants, how often does this or a similar grant become available? I mean, is this a once in a generational opportunity, or is this we're going to see another one in 6 months' time?
Through Madam Deputy Mayor, I suppose it's at the mercy of the Department of Communities and the government more generally. Obviously, as part of the last election, there was an election commitment made about providing a certain number of social housing dwellings, and this grant would be one way of achieving a contribution to that target. Whether it's to come around again as part of a future election cycle, I suppose we won't know at this stage, and anything would just be mere speculation.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, might as well.
You're welcome to stand up, but you don't need to.
Right? I will. I'll stand up because I'm already stand up. But Madam Deputy Mayor, you've got in your amendment here regarding the opportunities within the town centre, specifically 35 Old Perth Road and Wilson Street car park. Is there a time frame that you'd like to have the administration report back to council for, I suppose, future opportunities for the grant, or is it a scenario where we are going to understand that we're going to miss this round of funding, which obviously is going to end on the 30th of November, and do some research about the areas within the town centre? I believe if you were going to move this motion, there should be a time frame put on that, because we don't want to have this continue to go on and on and on, especially if there is another round of funding that might be available pretty quickly. That was just my question. Is there a time frame put on that? And
so
for the information.
There's not a time frame at the moment. We could seek advice from the staff. The intention of that second point on the alternative motion was not necessarily to seek funding, but to have a conversation with the Department of Communities and potentially the Minister, acknowledging that they have strong targets to meet, and there may be other avenues to pursue to for the town to deliver social housing, but also meet the state government's objectives.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any other questions? Okay. Get Councillor Houghton back in. Thank you.
Move on to item 8.2, Town Centre Master Plan. So I'll ask the officer, Mr. Gibson, to speak to that item.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This report, as you can see, is asking Council to consider adopting the Town Centre Master Plan. This project has been going for almost a year and a half, and obviously a brief introduction tonight won't probably do it justice in terms of the amount of work that's gone into it. It has indeed been an immense body of work undertaken by the town with the assistance of Creating Communities that has involved significant consultation across three distinct phases. In response to that involvement, the community as a collective is broadly supportive of the draft plan, which has in effect been community-led as opposed to developer-led. Council has recently provided a briefing about this project at the workshop on the 9th of November, and this master plan is now presented to Council with a recommendation to be formally adopted. This has been a major undertaking over 18 months, and one that will hopefully set the town centre up 4 years ahead.
So I'll open it up to questions from councillors. Councillor McLennan.
Thank you. On page 11 and in the officer recommendation, it makes reference to council adopting a flexible view of proposals, acknowledging that between a town centre master plan being adopted and the local planning scheme being adopted, that there will be a period of time. I'm just wondering if the staff would mind explaining what that would actually, how that would look.
Through you, Madam Mayor, it's really, I suppose, a philosophical position as opposed to any sort of level of detail about the mechanics of how it would work. Ultimately, if a applicant was to come in, lodge an application for development approval in a site that has a reasonably low density coding under the scheme, but they sought to develop in accordance with the master plan, there would be effectively an impasse because the scheme wouldn't have caught up to the master plan. What staff are suggesting council do is adopt as much as it can a flexible approach to considering those applications with a view to achieving the outcome as provided for by the master plan. That is not to say it will necessarily be capable of approval, because in most, if not all, of those cases, the application would probably need to go to the Western Australian Planning Commission for determination on the basis that it would be such a stark contrast to the existing local planning scheme number 10. Whether or not the department and the commission approve the application, I suppose we don't know, and we won't know until it's tested. But what staff are recommending is that council adopt philosophically a view that it is wanting to see development broadly in accordance with the master plan.
So can I just clarify, if an application was submitted that complied largely with the town centre master plan's objectives but was out of alignment with the current scheme, the staff would be assessing it based upon the town centre master plan and making recommendations to council, and then it would need to go to WAPC for approval independent of what council's position is?
Through you, Madam Mayor, it would certainly need to be determined by the planning commission.
Yep.
Because it would be outside the scope of the town and council to make a decision that is that far departed from LPS 10. Whether it needs to come to council or not, I suppose that would need to be determined case by case based on the particulars of the application, based on the delegation that applies. But one thing that is unlikely to be avoided is having it determined by the Planning Commission, because the R codes is a state planning policy. There are limitations, significant limitations on what the town and council can do to depart from the R codes. So any departure of a scale that one would expect that aligns with the master plan would certainly be in the commission's decision making role.
Thank you.
Councillor
Blifka. So just following on from that flexibility, so say where you had an instance where the master plan was suggesting a higher density, the underlying zoning wasn't quite aligned with that. If somebody were to approach council and say, well, we would like you to support the scheme amendment which allows the density to catch up with that which was proposed by the master plan, that is how that would operate. But it wouldn't be the case that the affected person that was seeking to rely on the density under the master plan could unilaterally go to the WAPC and ask for that rezoning. That's a process that would have to come through the town as the conduit to bringing that application before the WAPC.
Through you, Madam Mayor, it's not contemplated, not anticipated that it would apply to a scheme amendment. It's more, it's been contemplated to apply to an individual application for development approval. It is open to any landowner to progress their own amendment to the scheme. Whether the department and the commission would support an amendment to the scheme at this stage I'm not sure. We haven't tested that with the department, but it would not surprise if they were unwilling to support an amendment given that there's a broader process at play. What's recommended as part three of the recommendation is more in relation to individual applications for development approval as opposed to applications to amend the scheme.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Carter.
Thank you. Through you, Madam Mayor. The land that's owned by the town, considering the Wilson Street car park land in particular, is it possible or is it contemplated that that could move first, work on that one first?
Through you, Madam Mayor, the town does own a couple of sites in the town centre. Wilson Street car park is not one of those. Okay. The Wilson Street car park is a Crown Reserve vested to the town, so the town does have some custodianship, but doesn't own it in a typical freehold sense. But in terms of whether the town is advocating for its redevelopment, the answer is yes, absolutely. The CEO and I met with Ministers Booty and Kelly and Carey on Friday to walk them around the town centre and show them the opportunities that are available, particularly for those Crown land sites such as Wilson Street. So we're very hopeful that there will be some support from state government level for the development of those sites in the short term.
Thank you.
If councillors don't mind, I've got a couple of questions. There's mention of a future precinct structure plan. Can officers explain what such a plan will deliver in the way of benefits to the town and the community? And I'm also interested in the timeline involved in getting that structure plan to fruition.
Through you, Madam Mayor, in terms of the benefits, it'll ensure compliance with State Planning Policy 4.2. So it's an obligation that sits with the town, given that this town centre is a district centre. So it's a mandatory exercise. In terms of, and I suppose in addition to meeting the requirements of the policy, it would provide a statutory tool to control, guide and facilitate development in the town centre. The master plan, whilst valuable in its own right, is not a statutory tool. It is a broad conceptual guide about what the community wants to see in its town centre. The task would be to translate those broad findings and observations and feedback into a statutory tool to control development in the normal sort of regulatory sense. In terms of timeframes, it's in the corporate business, the draft corporate business plan to be over the next 2.5 years, with the current financial year to be scoping out the requirements of the precinct structure plan. The department has some broad guidance about what is required to go into a precinct structure plan, and we're in the process of getting a firm direction from the department about what is in and what is out. Once we know what is in, we can start preparing RFQs and other procurement documentation to get an idea about what it will cost to prepare all the relevant consultant reports to support the precinct structure plan. And that will be a matter for council to consider at budget time.
I have other questions, but if councillors want to follow on from that, no, okay. So, design guidelines to achieve the best outcomes in developments, would they be part and parcel of the precinct structure plan?
Through you, Madam Mayor, yes, that would be a component of it.
Okay. So I'd be correct in assuming that there's a gap if the Town Centre Master Plan is adopted. There's a gap in those controls between when that Town Centre Master Plan is adopted and when the Precinct Structure Plan is created. Is that correct?
Through you, Madam Mayor, in part, there would still be controls by virtue of the existing state planning policies regarding residential development. There's controls via the design review panel. And there's controls by the normal decision-making processes that consider whether a development is appropriate in any given instance. So there are controls there. So it would not be a total void of regulation, but certainly a precinct structure plan would add to those pre-existing controls and go into other elements such as design guidelines, as you say.
So if you don't mind, I'm going to backpedal a bit to the question initially put by the Deputy Mayor. I'm curious about that third dot point in the officer's recommendation. Can I ask, we've spoken briefly on other occasions about spot zoning, spot rezoning. Can I ask if a developer came forward with a proposal that was outside the scope of the current town planning scheme and was leaning more in direction of this town centre master plan, would it not be possible to actually do a spot rezoning of that particular site rather than requiring things to go to other parties? I'm curious about how that might work.
Through you, Madam Mayor, the scheme amendment would have to go to those same other parties in any event, and beyond those other parties, it would also need to go to the Minister. And the process would be 18 to 24 months as a typical guide. What we would be suggesting, at least as a point of initial inquiry, is that if it meets the objectives and the direction of the town centre master plan, would there be an opportunity from the Commission's end to avoid any unnecessary layering and processes to effectively have the development application considered on its individual merits at the time rather than running through a separate scheme amendment process which may well duplicate efforts and lead to further delays. You could certainly, it's open to council to adopt or not adopt the third point. It doesn't commit council to anything apart from it giving a general indication of the view about development in the town centre that meets the objectives of the master plan. If council is not comfortable with that, there's no obligation to adopt that third point, but it is considered to be a very positive message in terms of the direction the town is heading and being open-minded about the development in the town centre that meets the views of the community as set out in the master plan.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Any other questions from councillors? Councillor Politica and then Councillor McLennan.
Following up on that, so say you had a particular zoning where the satisfaction of the element objectives might grant an additional story by way of a bonus, the town centre master plan might be used as a tool to justify that as the future streetscape. Is that how that might potentially work?
Through you, Madam Mayor, broadly, yes. If you look through sort of the R codes and other planning documents, it talks about sort of the desired future streetscape, amongst a whole heap of other things, and that can relate to all sorts of treatments and heights and setbacks and building controls, that sort of thing. But if you look at the master plan, it's showing broadly a series of heights, and those heights are typically, by and large, in excess of what can be achieved under the current LPS 10. I go back to my preamble and say, well, this is a community-led plan and it has received broad support from the community who participated in the consultation process. So the community has effectively delivered through this master plan their view about what the desired streetscape form and function is going to be or should be in their view. So I think we can treat that with a high degree of confidence. That is the streetscape that we should be working towards, and if an application doesn't meet the standards of the current scheme, rather than take a purely bureaucratic approach and say, well, it doesn't comply, so therefore we're not entertaining it, this is a signal that we will, if we can, try and be proactive and facilitate desirable development. That said, we will not be the final decision maker, because as I said, it would involve the Planning Commission getting involved given the scale of the variation, but it would be a positive message about town centre development.
And so that sort of, I suppose, the maximum extent of the flexibility would be those sorts of considerations. So we're essentially saying to people, this is where we're going, like to come along, we'll help you where the current instruments don't necessarily give you that right, but because that's the direction we're heading in, we're going to essentially preempt that, so it's a transitionary arrangement. Is that?
Through you, Madam Mayor, very much so, and I suppose if, say, for example, if a property was coded R20 off the back of Palmerston Street, say, and the draft master plan said 3 or 4 stories, as an example, and they came in looking for 6 or 7, this positive messaging and desire to facilitate wouldn't extend that far. It would extend to meeting the town centre master plan, not going beyond it.
Okay, thank you.
I'm conscious that the draft master plan that was the subject of the final round of consultation had the Swan Districts Football Club relocating to the western end of the Oval. And then based upon a submission that was made by the club's board during that final round of consultation, there was a change so that the club is retained in the final master plan in its current location. I'm just seeking to understand whether there's been any concerns, whether the club's happy with what's being presented in the final master plan.
Through you, Madam Mayor. Broadly, the master plan, the draft master plan for council tonight, next Tuesday, is supported by the club, and that is that they are retained in general terms on their current site at the northern extent of the ground between the playing surface and Guildford Road. Whilst they're broadly supportive, it seems the club's current preference is that in addition to staying in their current location, having residential development above any renovated sort of footballing headquarters, the club would also like a mixed use element, which would imply commercial floor space. The town don't support that because it would basically be taking commercial floor space away from the core Old Perth Road precinct. So whilst there's comfort in having residential above the footballing headquarters, that doesn't extend to having additional commercial floor space, which would effectively undermine what we're trying to create along Old Perth Road.
Great, thank you.
Councillor Ames.
Through you, Madam Mayor. Again, to Mr Gibson, following on the Deputy Mayor's questions about the Swan Districts Football Club, I've seen that these documents have been updated further in regards to the Swan District's current conditional title boundary and what's being proposed at Site E. The introduction of the little yellow box in and around that. So my first question of part one and two is, has this been provided to the Swan Districts Football Club, and what's their, I suppose, agreement or understanding in regards to what has been proposed in Parcel E, which is the maroon coloured site, and what is their existing title boundary?
Through you, Madam Mayor. Their existing title, so last one first, the existing title boundary is the yellow dash line. In terms of whether they're comfortable with it, it was actually at the club's request, because a previous version actually contained the redevelopment to the cadastral boundary.
Right.
Whereas the club very recently expressed a view that they would prefer, rather than being contained to their existing parcel, they would prefer that the draft master plan show the footprint that was contemplated as part of a previous bit of work on a business case, and it was a floor plate that was effectively prepared, I think, in 2018 as part of that business case. So the club's preference was that the shape, rather than be inside the yellow dashed line, to be in accordance with a draft concept that was prepared back in 2018. So yes, the club's happy enough, as I understand it, with the actual footprint. The only issue outstanding, if you'd call it that, would be the fact that the draft master plan shows it as community and residential, as opposed to community mixed use and residential.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. So my part two question is that on the descriptions at the bottom of the document, all the where it's got parcel E, 8 to 10 stories, height, mixed use. What does that mixed use mean? Because I believe that the mixed use definition does include commercial opportunities as well. So if that's a confusion, that needs to be discussed or opened up very quickly, because I believe that, as you have alluded to, with the football club wanting to have some sort of commercial enterprise down there, mixed use falls into that.
Can I just clarify, when you say parcel E, you're referring to number 7?
There's a few different. I'm looking at. If you scroll. Parcel 7, development E, depending on which document you're looking at. Sorry, Mr. Gibson.
Through you, Madam Mayor. It does say mixed use. I suppose typically that would mean residential and commercial, combination of those. I suppose in this context, it is clarified with the C and R notation, which is community facilities and residential development. So that would be the mix of uses, which excludes commercial.
Yeah.
I have had a recent conversation, a couple of conversations with the CEO of the football club to advise of that. The club would like council to consider favourably the idea of having commercial elements there as well, but for the reasons that I've sort of already set out, staff wouldn't support that approach, although it is open for council to add that in.
And to follow up on that question, Mr. Gibson, through you, Madam Mayor, what type of commercial options has the club raised with the council that, obviously, if we are to decide on it as a council to have or to allow the club to have that commercial space, has there been anything raised by the club as to what type of commercial opportunities they would be looking to have at that spot?
Through you, Madam Mayor, not with me, direct. I'm, whether any sort of longer serving councillors or indeed the CEO who have been here longer than myself are aware of that, but it was a reference to commercial more generally. There wasn't any examples given of the type of commercial that they would be pursuing. Unsure, Councillor.
If you don't mind, Councillors, I'll just follow on from that with a question. My understanding is through the whole engagement process that CNR was promoted for that site, which is community facilities and residential development. So would I be correct in assuming that there's been no real community engagement about incorporating commercial mixed-use development into that site with our community?
Through Madam Mayor, yes, that's correct. It's been the various versions of the plan have had it either as straight residential or residential and community, but not any incorporation of commercial.
Sorry, Councillor Plifka?
I'd like to see a continuity of football played in the district. My concern is more practical. Is there been any discussion as to how it would actually occur? So say that Swan districts were to redevelop the land identified as 7, where would they be operating their football club from whilst that was occurring? Has there been any discussion regarding that?
Through you, Madam Mayor, that issue, I suppose, was raised. That would be a practical constraint to remaining broadly in the same location. If, as was provided for in previous versions, the football club was sort of moved around to location 6 at the western end of the ground, that would potentially allow a smoother transition because they could construct one while they're still using the other one. But that said, it would not be unheard of. East Fremantle will be located at the WACA for the next 2 years as the redevelopment of East Fremantle Oval occurs. So it's not, it would add a layer of difficulty, but it's not insurmountable, and there's a number of ways it could be resolved.
But potentially 2 years without football in there. Okay. And the other thing is, so obviously you've got sites 6 and 7. They have slightly different specified heights. So 7, which is also referred to as an E coding, goes 8 to 10 stories, whereas F, or 6 on the other map, which is the, I think that's 6 to 8 stories.
Mm-hmm.
Had there been any discussions about the possibility of what's being offered to Swan Districts at Site 7 being offered at Site 6? So that is that they would still enjoy the same development potential, they'd have the same, you know, restrictions and rights as what they is being proposed for Site 7. Has that, there been a discussion along those lines? I mean, I'm just trying to understand why that particular site, which wouldn't require the club to leave the district, hasn't been an attractive option.
Through Madam Mayor, it's probably a bit more nuanced than that, because it's not just simply a matter of height. It's the fact that the Swan Districts have a conditional title in the area marked out by the yellow dashed line. If the Swan Districts were, say, to move to location 6, that's part of the Crown Reserve with a management order to the town. So that's a slightly different proposition to location 7, which is a conditional title owned by the Swan Districts Football Club. So they're not apples and apples, if you know what I mean.
If you were to try and convert it to that, could that occur, and how long and involved would that process be?
It certainly could occur. Obviously, it involved the DPLH and probably the Minister for Lands. But procedurally, it could occur. I suppose this is a high-level conceptual master plan to generate the what the community, or demonstrate what the community wants to see in its town centre. It hasn't drilled down into the fine-grained mechanics of how it would come to pass. It would be possible, like I say, for the conditional title to be effectively moved to the western end of the ground. Obviously, that would involve decisions by not only council but the department and also the minister. But the latest approach we had from the club was that they would prefer to stay in and around their current parcel.
Is that because it's all too hard, or because they haven't been offered the same thing?
Through you, Madam Mayor, I would suggest it's probably a case of, it appears a simpler proposition to remain on its current title, given that it is the owner of that title. Moving to another section of the reserve would add another layer to it, no doubt. Again, not insurmountable, but I imagine the attraction of location 7 is that the existing title is there.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Ains.
Through to Madam Mayor, again to you, Mr Gibson. With the change of that boundary at the Swan Districts Football Club, from what it currently is with the yellow dashes to what's proposed in Parcel E or Lot 7, is that going to cause a raft of dramas, or would that just be a particular sort of sign-off from the Department of Lands based on, I suppose, what the current holding title looks like and what is looking to be developed?
Through you, Madam Mayor, I wouldn't have thought it'd be a huge issue. Obviously, it would still involve council, because it encroaches into the Crown Reserve, so it involved council, the department, and the minister again, as was the answer to Councillor Pulisic's question. I suppose, in terms of scale and degree, it's far less of a departure from the status quo, because it's more of a sort of a boundary realignment and taken from here and adding to there, whereas moving it to 6 is a more wholesale change, but broadly the same procedural steps would apply and ultimately require a decision from the minister. So again, it was simply a case of the club broadly requested this footprint based on some work that was done as part of a 2018 business case, and the town, in conjunction with the consultant, didn't see fit to object to that.
Okay.
Councillors, are there any more questions? I have one last question to Mr Gibson. As you know, I have expressed some concerns about how we might achieve excellence in design and sustainability features in high density, and my curiosity is how we achieve that in that interim period between potentially accepting this town centre master plan and the creation of the precinct structure plan. I'm curious about how that can be achieved in that interim period, which you've indicated will be about 2.5 years.
Through you, Madam Mayor, broadly it would be the development assessment process. Whether or not there is a precinct structure plan or not, there is still a requirement to obtain development approval. So there is a means there to regulate the form and function of any development. Like I said before, we need to run it. We typically run any application we received through the design review panel, and that process would pick up on those sustainability issues as well as the typical design issues. And we've also got our suite of local planning policies in relation to water-sensitive urban design and energy-efficient design, as well as just the normal assessment process that relates to every DO.
So at the time I actually mentioned the potential height bonuses when you achieve greater excellence in design and what have you. And it appears to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's no ability to actually incorporate these sort of incentives in the current situation until the precinct structure plan is created. Would I be correct in that assumption?
That's correct, Madam Mayor. This is, like I said, a conceptual master plan. It's not a statutory document. It would be inappropriate to sort of try and load statutory controls into a non-statutory document. So noting, of course, that design quality and environmental performance is dear to the heart of council, that would certainly form part of any assessment around the tool.
Thank you. Councillor Ames.
Sorry, well, I've got one more question through Madam Mayor to Luke Gibson. Mr. Gibson, when were these updated town master plan documents updated? Do you have a date when they were recreated with the different bits and pieces that have been on there? Like there's a few changes since we saw them last week. So is there a version control on this?
Through Madam Mayor, I can't recall the exact date, but I'd say it was late last week. And that was, we obviously had the workshop last Tuesday the 9th, and there were a series of discussions with the football club late last week, and a few minor changes were made in response to those discussions.
Thank you.
So on that note, we'll move on to the next item, which is 8.3, review of various parking restrictions around the Bassanine Oval. And I'll ask the officer if he would like to speak to this.
Through you, Madam Mayor. This report is for Council to consider parking restrictions generally around Bassanine Oval. It follows on from a number of previous meetings of Council, one in June this year, where Council asked staff to review 4 specific matters, and another meeting in August of this year where electors passed 3 separate motions in relation to the issue. The report considers those various matters and recommends that various changes are made, broadly moving away from signage on posts and towards yellow lines on the actual road. The exception to that is on Devon Road, where the consultation suggested that the local community wanted some level of restriction but didn't favour yellow lines. In that location, it simply recommended that the particulars of the sign restrictions be amended so as to prohibit parking on weekends. It is very open to Council to maintain the current restrictions or to impose different restrictions to those recommended by staff.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. I'll open it up to councillors who might like to ask questions. Councillor Ames and then Councillor McLennan.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And to you, Mr. Gibson, just the amendment number 3 there, amend existing signs for Devon Road. That'll be no parking Saturdays and Sundays 24/7, 365. Is that correct, based on how I read that?
Through Madam Mayor, 24/7, 2 days a week.
Saturday, March and August, to no parking Saturdays and Sundays. could just read that again to myself out loud. No parking, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, March to August. That's very confusing.
Through Madam Mayor.
So every Saturday.
Give it to me again.
Through Madam Mayor, what it's saying is changing the restriction from no parking, 8 to 6 Saturday, March to August, and changing that restriction.
Yeah.
To a restriction saying no parking Saturdays and Sundays.
All year round.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson.
Councillor McKinnon.
Read that so many times today.
So, Mr. Gibson, you said it's open to council to leave the parking restrictions as they currently are. So I'm just curious to understand, I know we've gone over this a number of times already, what the initial impetus was to review the parking restrictions, and there's a comment made that they are no longer meeting the needs of the community. Could you let me know how we were aware that they were no longer meeting the needs of the community?
Through Madam Mayor, I'd have to take that one on notice, unfortunately. That was before my time, but I believe it started with an order that was undertaken in 2018, and there may have been discussion at the time which sought to extend the review to around Bassendean Oval. Happy to provide further information.
Great, thank you.
Councillor Wilding.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. My question is to Mr. Gibson as well. And in regards to the verge parking suggestion in the document, given that broadly across the town they're encouraging people to use their verges as productive spaces, does requesting or suggesting that residents park on the verges instead of the relatively unproductive concrete next to it kind of contradict our broad direction for the town?
Through Madam Mayor, I suppose it's potentially, but it is provided for under the local laws, so it may well be under a future revision of the local law, council which wishes to adopt a different position, which may seek to deter or presume against parking on the verge, but at the moment it is permissible.
Councillor Politico.
The change from no parking to no stopping, what are we trying to achieve by that change, and what's the difference between no parking and stopping? Because all I can think of is no stopping is preventing people from pulling up on the side of the road to maybe let somebody get out of the car. So potentially you couldn't be delivered to your verge by an Uber, because that would be contrary to that.
Through you, Madam Mayor, I suppose strictly speaking, no stopping is indeed that, no stopping. But in terms of a practical sense, if someone was to be dropped curbside to their property, first of all, it would be particularly unlikely that a ranger would be on the spot to observe it occurring. And secondly, if that did in fact happen, I would suggest, as we've sort of set out before, rangers prefer to take a educational approach as opposed to a particularly punitive approach. And it would be a case of just advising people that no stopping means exactly that. But I'd suggest the chances of any driver being infringed for dropping someone curbside and then moving on would be extraordinarily low. So in the context of what would be practically implemented, no stopping and no parking would be interchangeable terms.
And so why could we not simply retain no parking? Is that just old language?
Through Madam Mayor, I believe it's old language. Without having the local law in front of me, I think it may be a term in the local law, but again, happy to provide further information to council through the week.
I've got a couple of questions on this one, if councillors don't mind. There seems to be significant discrepancy between the survey respondents compared to those responses from people who actually live in the streets. And I do understand there's a comment in the report that some respondents obviously commented on all streets, which clearly altered some of the responses, or the percentage of for and against. So my question, Mr. Gibson, is this survey process seems to have produced quite a variable response that may not accurately reflect the desires of people in those streets. And I'm wondering if there is some other way that we can engage in the future to achieve a better, more accurate reflection of community desires. And I know that Devon Road was treated differently, but I'm more interested in those other streets where, for instance, some streets had no responses whatsoever, and yet on another graph, you know, there's been multiple people who have responded supporting. So that's a problem for me, and I'm wondering if there is a way that we can actually achieve better responses in the future apart from these survey processes. Could we maybe put our thinking caps on that to look forward and how we might do that?
Through you, Madam Mayor, yes. I suppose what the staff have tried to do here is distill out the comments from those directly affected as opposed to being broadly in the area. That's why the tables are, in fact, different, with less numbers contained in the second page, which just goes to demonstrate that a good number of respondents offer their view on a good number of potential restrictions. If council would prefer to not have that breadth of feedback, would rather only hear from those that are directly affected, we could certainly we could look at ways of providing or obtaining feedback only from those directly affected by parking, but more broadly happy to chat to council at another time about how that might look.
I actually consider that staff have tried very hard in this instance. It just seems that we've got some variable responses there, so that's why I raised it. But thank you for the efforts in that respect. My other question relates to long-term planning for these streets. Some streets I can see the logic in what's been proposed, and there are other streets where potentially there could be longer term planning to either increase parking spaces or decrease speed of vehicles, all these things come into play. So I'm curious as to whether the staff saw potential with some of these streets to look at future planning that might alleviate some of these problems that goes above and beyond the no standing provisions in this report.
Through you, Madam Mayor, probably not as part of this process, but I think more broadly, yes, if you go back to the previous item, the Townsend Master Plan, that is probably the, pardon the pun, the appropriate vehicle for considering that matter. You'll notice on the actual plan there's a series of car parking bay areas shown. I think one on the eastern side of the football ground, also along perhaps the western side of Wilson Street, from memory. So the master plan does touch on the issue of parking to some degree, because it was, as part of the consultation for that process, an issue that was raised pretty frequently. So obviously the town, working with the consultant, sought to try and mitigate those concerns by ensuring any master plan did acknowledge that there needed to be an appropriate provision of car park to make the town centre prosper and thrive. So in terms of whether staff are looking at it, the answer would be yes, but probably more in the context of the town centre master plan and any sort of capital works that would be required to implement that master plan.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Councillor Wilding.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. My question is to Mr. Gibson. When the assessment was made that there was ample parking within, I think it's a 400 metre radius from the Oval, was that assuming that all patrons would be able to walk that distance? So, for example, they weren't people with disability, seniors, or parents, or pregnant people?
Through you, Madam Mayor, I suppose it didn't go to that level of detail. It used a 400 metre sort of ped shed, is the common term from a land use planning point of view, is that that is deemed to be a comfortable 5-minute walk, but that presupposes, of course, that there's no sort of underlying issue or restriction that would impede walking. So it was whilst it's an industry standard, it does presuppose a normal path of walking unencumbered.
Yep.
So whether it did the town's assessment sort of cater for those other elements, I'd suggest not.
So would it then be possible that the new parking restrictions would actually reduce accessibility to the Oval as a result?
Through you, Madam Mayor. Potentially in some respects. There's still, I suppose staff are still satisfied there are a number of car parking bays in close proximity, just because the ped shed is 400 metres, not every bay is located 400 metres away. So there are certainly bays within the 400 metres, but obviously with these things it tends to be first come, first serve, and therefore it may well be at any given occasion someone might have to walk 100, 200, 300 or 400 metres to their destination. So staff are trying to balance the desires of the local community who live there, as well as the needs of the visitors who come to attend the football and other things in the district. So it is a bit of a balancing act, and it's not an exact science.
Councillor Carter.
Thank you. Mr. Gibson, have discussions been held with Hawaiian and the shopping centre, because the pressure that this will put on the shopping centre parking would be quite intense?
Through you, Madam Mayor, I'm not aware of any direct discussions on this particular issue with Hawaiian. However, we have had good dialogue with Hawaiian throughout the master plan process, given they're a major stakeholder in the town centre. Reviewing the aerial photography of the site, it doesn't appear that the site, the Hawaiian site, is ever at 100% parking occupancy. So it's not as if it's a case of even on football days that every bay is taken up. So I suppose for those reasons, we're satisfied there's enough bays in the area to service the football ground, particularly considering there's two train stations in the town centre as well, and we'd actually like to transition people more to a public transport sort of mode as opposed to the private vehicle. But noting that not everyone will catch public transport, there does need to be some facility for private vehicles, but no, to my knowledge, there hasn't been a direct conversation on this particular matter with Hawaiian.
Further to that, their discussions with Hawaiian on the town master plan, of course, is quite separate to this new pressure. And if you've ever been to the shopping centre on a Saturday when there's football, you do find it hard to find a place.
Through you, Councillor. Through you, Madam Mayor. That's, noted.
Following on from some of those questions, this is probably a speculation type question, but here goes. The original timeline for Swan Districts was March to August, and that's changed to February to September. So clearly there's more usage of that space, but I think everybody here would acknowledge that the times when parking is most full in that area is during major matches. So my question to the staff would be, has there been any discussion with Swan Districts? I know that there were previously suggestions that they should include public transport ticket in their ticket price, but could we perhaps flip that and ask if there's been any discussion with Swan Districts about potentially discounting the ticket entry price for those patrons who produce evidence of a public transport to this area on game day? I'm wondering if that is a way, instead of offering a ticket, a public transport included in every ticket sold, would there be potential to do it the other way, that they get a slight discount entry fee to Swan Districts if they produce their public transport ticket, their train ticket?
Through you, Madam Mayor, I suppose there's potential. I'd imagine that the ticket price would be set by the club and or the Football Commission. And whether the club and or Football Commission would see value in discounting the entry price because someone or public transport? I suppose that would be a question only they could answer, but certainly it has been raised with the club previously about whether there was the potential to have the sort of the Transperth ticket built into the game ticket or the season membership, and the response was that the pricing structure from the PTA is such that it would make a meaningful difference to the price, and the sensitivities around the price are such that the club decided not to pursue that. But it could certainly be raised with the club to see if there was any desire to provide some sort of discount for those spectators that caught the train.
I think whole families that are travelling by train, the price can be a little bit of an interest to them. And I would understand why Swan Districts wouldn't want to incorporate that into every single ticket sold. So that's why I asked about an alternative. But that also brings me to another question, in that if we bring in these parking restrictions, and I know that we've always had a policy of gently when it comes to infringements. But I'd ask the staff, if we are looking to change behaviours, would not a period of notices that you're breaking the law or you're breaking our parking restrictions, followed by potential infringements, would that not contribute to changing behaviours with taking the car everywhere?
Through you, Madam Mayor, broadly that's what happens now. It is a case of sort of education and warning, and then obviously any sort of recidivist behaviour is met with a more punitive response in the form of an infringement, but by and large, that's what our observation would be, that education first approach works reasonably well, and when the issue is brought to the driver's attention, it's typically rectified and not repeated. But for those that are told but don't change their behaviour and continue to breach the local law, there is an escalation there which can be dealt with via an infringement. So what you're saying, Councillor Hamilton, is broadly what happens at the moment. Education first, then sort of a punishment, punitive approach second.
Thank you. Any other questions, councillors? So we'll move on. So item 8.4, nominations for local government members for the Metro Inner North Joint Development Assessment Panel.
Through Madam Mayor, it's pretty straightforward, this one. This report is simply seeking council to nominate its JDAP representatives for the next 2 years.
Any questions, councillors? So we'll move on to the next item, which is item 8.5, street tree removal requests. And I think we'll give you a break, Mr. Gibson, and move on to Mr. Adams. Mr. Adams, would you like to speak to this item?
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Madam. Thank you, Madam Mayor. The purpose of this report is to consider the removal of two street trees, being at 1 Bassendean Parade and 8 Woolcock Street. The two street trees presented to Council tonight are causing damage to infrastructure and private property, and therefore their removal is recommended. The existing Council policy, section 4.3, states that requests for removal of street trees will only be considered if the trees are of poor health, structurally unsound, is a noxious weed, or has ecological or amenity, or no ecological or amenity value. In this instance, these trees do not fit this category, and therefore is presented to council tonight as they're causing damage to private property. In the instance of 1 Bassendean Parade, the two existing river gums, as shown on page 29 of the report, are growing into the private property. The roots from the trees, the tree on the left, is causing the damage to the private property, and the property owner is satisfied that removing this tree and retaining the tree on the right, as long as the tree on the right is monitored, which we are happy to undertake. There is a significant root that's growing. It's about 100 mil in diameter. It's growing under the front fence, and it's impacting upon the footing of the front fence. The front fence is a mechanical gate. It is moving the gate. You can see a minor crack in the fence, but the root is impacting upon the fence, and they've made adjustments to the fence over the past few years. In the instance of Walcott Street, an existing jacaranda tree's roots are growing into the private property and is impacting upon the footing of the residence and causing cracking to the external walls. For both instances, the advice received from the town's insurer, LGIS, is that if the town does not take reasonable steps to prevent roots from damaging private property within a reasonable amount of time, once the issue is known, then the town risks being liable for further damages. In regards to both these trees, unfortunately, there is no action that the town can take, such as pruning the roots, without impacting upon the structural integrity of the trees, which would create other liabilities for the town. And therefore, we're recommending the removal of these two trees, unfortunately.
Councillor McLennan.
Thank you for that, Mr. Adams. Just a couple of questions. First of all, I'm unclear on which of these tree removals come to councils. So, for example, I'm aware that there was a tree earlier this year on Ivanhoe, I believe, that was a mature London plane tree that had caused a crack in a front wall that didn't come to council. Can you just help me to understand which decisions are required to be made by council and which staff are able to make independent of a council decision?
Yep. Thank you. Through you, Madam Mayor, the ones that fit the policy don't need to come to council, and most of the trees that we have removed have been dead or dying or in not good condition, and therefore we've made that decision to remove the trees. In this instance, these two trees don't fit the policy and therefore needed to be removed. Therefore we're bringing them to council. In that instance, we probably should have brought that to council. Yeah.
So thank you for that. My next question was, us and lots of other local governments are investing very heavily in trees because we know how important they are for all sorts of reasons. So this issue is going to continue to arise over and over again. Is there anything that we can put in place in terms of changes to the way we construct footpaths around trees or requirements for front fences and so on that might help to reduce the ability or reduce the impact that a tree may have in future so that we can avoid this recurring?
Yeah. Through you, Madam Mayor, I think so. The trees at... Both these trees that we're recommending to be removed have what one could consider as poor root systems. They're both above a clay layer, and that's not allowing the roots to grow down, and therefore they're growing horizontally and therefore impacting upon the private property. In regards to the one at Bassendean Parade, these trees weren't planted, they've grown naturally. So where we are planting, we're planting them in a much better way than we ever have in the past, which is improving root growth to go down further rather than horizontal. There are methods that we are exploring. WELGA has a committee that obviously this is a problem statewide, and WELGA has a committee that's trying to create a tree purchasing and planting contracts, and I'm a part of that committee as well. So I'm learning quite a lot about what we can do. in the past few months, we've received four requests to remove trees, and two of them we've found a way to prune roots, put in root barriers, and enable the trees to stay. And we've also changed the path around the trees by, raising the level of the tree. But it's really about, I think, getting the planting right and ensuring the roots grow vertically down rather than horizontally.
Thank you.
Councillors, any other?
Councillor
Palifka and then Councillor Ames.
We'll discuss each of those sites. So the site where you've got the two large river gums, the proposed solution is to remove one of them, which is said to be the offending tree. When did we predict that the second one's likely to become a problem? Because these aren't small trees.
They're not small trees. The agreement that we've put in place is to monitor the tree. It is a matter of the tree impacting upon the wall.
No, I accept all of that. So I'm saying 10 years' time, we find out the second one's doing the
same
thing.
Maybe 10 years'
time. It has to go.
Yeah.
Why don't we say now that's going to happen, cut them both down, plant something so that it's got 10 years, and so by the time we get to that, we've got an appropriate tree in place. Which won't cause these types of issues. So I'm sure we can scout out the various trees that are available and find one which has less invasive roots. Is that something we could consider? Because I don't see this as solving the problem, it's sort of delaying it.
That is something that we can consider, absolutely. I probably wouldn't plant a tree in this location. I don't think it would... It would grow successfully. That there may be a species that might enjoy the clay layer underneath. There are many trees that were planted in, I think within about 50 metres of this location. There's many trees that were river gums that were planted as well. So it's just that it's probably a bit of a feature tree, and I suppose we are trying to do what we can to keep the trees in place, particularly the large ones. But that's an option for council to consider. Yeah.
And that leads into the second site. So you're saying that tree has to go because it's lifting a few papers. Maybe that's
no. It's impacting upon the house, the footings.
Lifting the footings.
It's impacting the footings and cracking the external walls. And in both locations, The verges are small and the property boundary is only a small distance away. By cutting those roots, will impact upon the structural integrity of the trees, so we can't...
That tree's to be removed as well. Is it possible to plant something else in its place?
Oh, something else will be planted in its place, yeah.
So that site doesn't provide the same difficulties as the other site?
No. Although there is a clay layer and we'll have to do something appropriate there. We talking to the town's arborist, something doesn't seem right with that tree, and we suspect that there might have been a problem with how that tree was planted as well. So
implicit in all recommendations to remove something is essentially to replace where possible?
It replaced with at least one tree, yeah. In the case of one Bassendean parade, we wouldn't do that. It's not an appropriate location, but... where we have removed trees, which is generally being trees that are unhealthy, we've replaced it with at least two in most circumstances where the space is.
And would the owner ordinarily be consulted?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And these owners have been consulted, and the owner at 8 Woolcock Street was keen to keep the tree, but we sort of pointed out to her what was occurring and what their responsibility would have to do, what would have to be. And it took quite a few weeks for her to come to terms with removing the tree, because it is a bit of a feature of the court as well. So we want to make sure whatever we put back there is significant. And it may include, planting, out the court a bit more than just having one tree.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Ames.
I thank you, Madam Mayor, and through you to Mr. Adams, new to council, and seeing some of the items that we are approving for payment later on in the meeting. What's the cost of having to remove both trees, either collectively or individually? And is the town liable in any which way to date with the integrity of the fence line on or at One Pasadena Parade? I haven't read that there is anything, which that might be the case. So just to follow up on those two questions in regards to finances for removal.
Answer the first question, Madam Mayor. Sorry. In answer to the first question, we pay a rate of, I think it's $4,600, we pay a day rate for tree removal. We have various rates. One of them is a day rate where we bring a contractor in, $4,600, and they'll come in and do a whole range of trees and major limbs. So in this instance, I'm expecting it wouldn't be any more than $2,000. I'd expect it to be around maybe $1,000, $1,500 to remove this tree, which if you had a tree removed like this at home, would it cost you probably $10, I'd say. In regard to the liability question, if you look at the advice provided by LGIS in the report, I would say that we are liable currently. But there's no claim has been submitted by the property owner to date. So I feel like they've been quite reasonable, and we'd like to be reasonable in return.
Just a follow-up final question to you again, Mr. Adams. Any thoughts on preserving part of that large specimen for other uses around town?
Oh, indeed. We have a collection of logs that we collect, and we've got a deal going with some of the contractors where they drop logs off and we repurpose them. So, you know, in this instance, happy to repurpose them into the local park just nearby, across the road, playgrounds, wherever. And some of my staff do a bit of artwork with them, a bit of... create into seats and stuff, and so yeah, the town staff will be looking forward to repurposing that, everyone is aware that with all the during the storms, we have a significant amount of staff going out picking up fallen branches, etc., and that all gets mulched, and that's what goes back to the community for mulching and back into our garden beds. And
if councillors don't mind, when we look at clay soils, we obviously have a tree planting program for clay soil areas, so there are clearly trees suitable to those soils. And I do take on board the comments in the report that some of these trees naturally seeded and grew. Is there a specific process for planting in clay soils that ensures that these sort of problems don't happen? Because we've read the report where the tree roots are growing on the surface above the clay soil level. So are there processes that will stop that happening with tree planting or not?
To you, Madam Mayor. Back to you, Madam Mayor. Yes, we do have certain processes. It does depend on the level of cut clay, so the percentage of clay, and where the clay is situated. Sometimes there's like clay layers, but there's not this massive clay. So it is about trying to, I suppose, penetrate that clay layer, and we do look at the species as well. But it is mainly due to the species, and in these instances, it's been considered by the arborist that the clay layer is acting as a root barrier. So I think planting in this location is going to be difficult. It's also dependent upon what's next to it. in this instance, you know, having a footpath and a road next to it. Tree roots seem to love footpaths and roads, and I'm not sure if it's more due to the heat or if it's more due to moisture, but they but heat is certainly something that tree roots sometimes crave. So being next to roads and footpaths in a clay zone creates a channel for the roots to grow in, whereas when they're in sort of more denser clay, the tree roots seem to act in a different manner or more surrounded by clay.
Last question for me.
Not that I'm an arborist.
Is there potential, if you're saying that planting new trees in some of these locations is difficult, is there potential to encourage that particular landowner to do a verge transformation out the front of their house to encourage, because clearly that will reduce some of the heat that's generated when you have no trees. Is that possible, or that's a remote possibility?
No, we've been in good discussions with her. They don't have much space.
You did mention that, yes.
Yeah, there's not much space in that verge, so the impact on doing sort of a verge transformation would be minimal.
Okay.
And they do have a very natural front garden with lots of trees and natives.
Following on from Councillor McLennan and her comment that this will be an increasing problem, clearly we do have many, many trees very close to property lines, and I would be very interested in this Wilder group, any processes that come out of that group that can minimise the future removal of mature trees, because clearly mature trees benefit our community. So is it possible that if there are treatments that will minimise this into the future, that we could perhaps be appraised of those at some stage?
Yes, Madam Mayor, that's something we'll work through. Yep.
Are there any further questions on this item? So moving on to item 8.6, draft traffic management treatment policy and guidelines. So the officers like to speak to this one.
Yes, thanks, Madam Mayor. The purpose of this report is for Council to consider adopting the draft amended traffic management and treatment policy and guidelines. The existing policy was adopted in 2004 and was reviewed in 2014 and is therefore due for a review and update. This review has been undertaking in line with the latest thinking and practices in this area, and we have made appropriate adjustments to ensure this is a contemporary document. The main changes are described on page 36 of the report, but essentially the previous assessments considered only traffic volumes, speed and through traffic, whereas the proposed updated version assesses speed, volume, crash data, vulnerable road users, activity generators and amenity. We believe this is a more appropriate method of assessment that will lead to more effective treatments, being recommended along with a scoring system that is being adjusted to a weighted approach rather than a threshold approach, which will determine the level of action required according to the risk the site poses, and therefore we recommend the adoption of the new policy. The existing policy is quite limited in its functionality, and we think that this update will, not only make it a more contemporary document, but be a lot more functional than the current one.
Councillor McLennan has questions.
Sorry to jump in on there. I really like objectivity, so thank you for the weightings and the criteria. I'm just wondering if this is something that the staff have developed, or it's based on something that's been used elsewhere that's already been demonstrated to deliver the outcomes that are being sought?
Yeah, this has been used elsewhere. Most of the local governments that we spoke to are using this method. Local governments like Stirling, Wanneroo, Joondalup, and lots of the other bigger councils, this is what they're using. So
the weightings are consistent with what they're using?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Councillor
Ayres. Yeah, through Madam Mayor, to Mr Adams, what are the financial implications of moving to such a policy? Like, for example, your notation in point 2, traffic volume. How are we within the town of Bassendean going to be able to gather this traffic volume data, and what expense is that going to take, and time and effort to be able to get data, and when's that data used for then obviously different infrastructure programs within the town moving into the future?
Yeah. Through you, Madam Mayor, thanks for that question. The town has a program where we are continually obtaining traffic data. We do it ourselves. One of the staff in the engineering department tracks it, and we have the traffic counters and sends out the operational guys to put them out. And you'll see them around at the moment. I think there's one down on West Road. Where did I see some the other day? It was just north of the train. I think it were on Ilanthi. So they've been monitored all the time. This will effectively have no financial impact.
Because it's already sort of in place within the town already. It's just going to be obviously redirected for different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Councillor McKinnon, do you have another question?
Yeah, another question. In terms of when these criteria will be applied, are we relying on people reporting concerns about a particular road, or are we proactively, like I know you said, we're measuring traffic count, but in terms of doing these assessments. So I guess my question comes down to sometimes it seems a road that a community member has identified gets given higher priority when potentially it's not the most problematic road purely because they have raised a concern.
Mm.
Is that the approach that we're going to continue to take, or is there something more substantial behind it?
Yeah, to you, Madam Mayor, we do operate on a complaints system. And I suppose across the government sector, that seems to be the approach that works. If there is speeding, then people complain, and then we go and assess. And you know, we can end up with a traffic assessment being undertaken with the recommendation that it might be one person that's complained. So it doesn't really matter if it's one or 20, I suppose. If it is 20, then obviously there's 20 people who are concerned, but yes, often it is just one person, and we instigate it upon that. I think that's a pretty reliable, it seems to be quite a reliable approach within the sector, because people do like to complain about traffic, whether it's volume or speed, and so they do like to let us know, and we then react and do the assessments, and it's appropriate to have a contemporary policy that reflects the modern requirements, I think.
Thanks. Councillor
Polifka. I noticed in the report said that no community consultation was undertaken. Is that usual for this sort of more technical policy?
That is usual. It could be could go out to community consultation. I wouldn't expect any responses, to be frank. That's pretty standard practice. Yeah.
Okay.
If you don't mind, I'll follow up on a question. I do understand that this policy relates to traffic management. But could I ask Mr. Adams, given this council has some fairly
strong views on improving street amenity and inclusion of street trees and water sensitive urban design and all of these type of things. Is it worthwhile incorporating into this policy a section at the beginning with desirable objectives to be incorporated so that into the draft policy so that we promote the best outcomes? The main reason I ask is because it seems very focused on the actual treatment of slowing or changing traffic behaviour, but some of that might come from implementation of other aspects of the street. So I'm curious about whether you see that as a possibility in this draft policy.
To you, Madam Mayor, I think the policy is more of an assessment tool.
Yep.
To assess the current situation, as in the traffic behaviour, speeds and even volumes, I suppose, and assessing that against the current street layout. I think what you're referring to may come into the recommendations after that, of incorporating some traffic control devices that may include, you know, altering the road alignment, or, you know, planting of trees or beautification, or, you know, incorporating some of that more psychological traffic control devices, which can be art or can be tree planting or horizontal deflections and those types of devices. So I think that's more of the solutions, and this is more of an assessment tool.
So just reading on page 3rd page of the new draft policy, category 1 seems to indicate that there's a process of assessment, community consultation with councils and community. Then it goes on to indicate that what property owners will be consulted, and then it goes on to say a project will proceed to detailed design if there is a majority support from the responses received during the community consultation, or if changes can be made to address the primary issues of concern raised during the consultation. So my question is, what is planned to come back to council, and what would go directly to detailed design? Because that seems to indicate that, you know, the consultation with councils and community would happen first, then it goes straight to detailed design. So I'm just curious about the process.
Oh, it would, to you, Madam Mayor, it would come back to council,
okay,
prior to going to community engagement, which is what's happening with the next item.
No, I just wanted to check because it was a little unclear in that particular paragraph.
Yep.
Any other questions? Okay. We'll move on to 8.7, traffic management request for railway parade. And I'll ask the officer to speak to this because there is obviously a sheet of paper in front of all the councillors. So.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Traffic management request for railway parade. I did drop this on the councillors' desks tonight before the meeting. It was omitted from the attachments, and it was referred to within the report. So the purpose of this report is to reconsider traffic management options for railway parade between Lord Street and First Avenue. The town has investigated the issue and presented recommendations to council in July 2021. So I've tried to capture the main points of that report to present to the new council, just to provide you with some context. We have addressed one part of the resolution of council, which is to update the policy, which we have done, and that was undertaken. Well, will be undertaken at the OCM next week, and we have explored alternative traffic calming solutions. The options that have been explored for this location include the use of vertical deflection devices, speed humps, and there's two sort of main types. They're speed cushions and raised plateaus, which are detailed in attachment 5. The town has also explored non-capital expenditure items such as signage, which is detailed on pages 40 and 41 of this report. The cheapest option is to request Main Roads WA to install Remember 50 in built-up areas, which would be at Main Roads' discretion. There is a description within the report of how Main Roads decrees upon that. Or the other item is the solar-powered interactive signs that displays the driver's speed back to them in the form of their speed and faces depicting whether they are above or below the speed limit, which effectively reminds them that it's a 50 kilometre an hour zone. And it's a bit of a different sign. The 50 kilometre an hour signs, we see them all the time. People just become oblivious to them and don't really pay much attention to them anymore. So signage is important, but at the same time can sometimes be disregarded. The other option that the town has explored is the use of tree plantings, which is shown in this attachment here, which is incorporated into horizontal deflection devices, which are chicanes. These devices are significantly more expensive. We would be required to have 4 for this location, for this stretch of road, and we're estimating, it's a very high level estimate, that this would be in excess of 500k to implement something like this. If that could be implemented, the 500k is also disproportionate to what the actual traffic issues are. As you'll see in the report, the actual speed issues are quite low. When assessed in a traffic engineering perspective, and I'm happy to, I'll talk about that a bit later, but the issue with the chicanes is that it has to cater for buses. It is a bus route, and the chicanes have to be wide enough to allow the buses to travel through there. That would impact upon the existing trees that are planted in the area, the footpath, and it actually starts to encroach on private property, so we'd have to resume some land. The other problem is if you're doing this for buses, it then creates the space for people just to drive straight through it. So they would be very, very expensive and ineffective. But we did need to explore all the options.
That's what it was done, just to explore the options. Okay, cool.
Yeah. That's what it's there for. It's okay. just to show that okay.
That there are options.
Yeah. It's not something we consider. So on the speed assessment. So when you go through and undertake it in a traffic engineering perspective, it's basically we manage the 85th percentile. So it's 85%, we manage 85% of the drivers. So there might be this really small percentage of drivers, and it's they're essentially hooning, and it's really difficult to manage. So that's something that needs to be taken into consideration. So but the perspective of the resident standing out in front of their street when people are hooning up and down the road at 2 a.m. or whatever is a different perspective, but it is difficult, if almost impossible, to manage, and can be considered as a police issue. But that doesn't mean that we ignore it. So, just to give the residents a perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Before we start questions, I would like to say thank you for putting so much thought into the concerns expressed by the previous council for this item. So I have to say thank you for that. And now I'll open up to questions. So Councillor McLennan had her hand up, then Councillor Ames.
So firstly, thank you for looking at the reduction of trees, because I know that's come up many, many times, and I'm pretty sure that the $500,000 in resumption of land is enough to dissuade everybody from considering that. In terms of these interactive signs, are there options that can be relocated to other sites within the town at some stage instead of them being there for all eternity and become somewhat, you know, become
question.
Somewhat new to them? And is there any evidence that they actually work?
Look, I suppose, through you, Madam Mayor, sorry. through you, Madam Mayor, the technically they could be relocated. We could install them in a way that we could break the concrete out and relocate them.
They're not designed for that, though.
They're not really designed for that. And then, you know, there's a high possibility that we break them and then, you know, you break the, there's the solar panels and there's wiring and all that sort of stuff. So they are designed to, I suppose, be in place, but that's something I can further investigate. And look, I think the, I think if we install these interactive signs, we would, and then we did an assessment in the following months and years, I think we would probably have a decrease in the 85th percentile speed, albeit small, but I don't think that would achieve the result that the resident is looking for. I think the resident is looking, is concerned about the hooning, and the hooning, you know, they'd probably be very pleased to get a, you know, a angry face looking back at them. There could be various other machinations that this could take place, but I do think that they would reduce beep, but that's, I think, for the 85% of the people who would drive down the road, and it is a road that I suppose lends itself to being sort of long and narrow, and we're just reconstructing the pavement at the moment, so it's going to be a lot smoother, so people will probably want to actually go faster. So if we don't install them, the 85th percentile speed would probably increase. So we do, I suppose, as the engineering group, believe that this is probably a something that I think we should seriously consider. Although, yes, the effectiveness is, I think, probably the best way to describe it is on the marginal side. Not marginal going one way or the other, but on the quite small. And most of the people who do the right thing will go, oh, yeah, it's a 50 zone. Whoops, I'm doing 55. I need to slow down a bit. But it's not going to really, I don't think, change the behaviour of those doing 80 and 90 and et cetera.
Thank you.
That's right. Thank you, Madam Mayor. And questions directed to you, Mr. Adams. The couple of interactive signs at the locations indicated on the attachment to the produced report, I couldn't find where those signs were going to be planned to be positioned, is my first question. There wasn't any dot points or any smiley faces or sad faces on the plans there.
I think that part got incorporated into, I'll check with that, but I think that part got incorporated into the actual report with the on page 41, with the diagrams of the, it's difficult to see the smiley face in there.
Oh, no, as in where they will be planned on Railway Parade.
Oh, okay.
It says, endorses the installation of two interactive solar-powered speed interactive signs at locations indicated on the attachment to this report.
Okay.
So I just want to... Have you got a ballpark figure about where you believe they'll be positioned?
Oh, look, they'll be... one would be installed not far from Lord Street when you turn into...
Railway Parade.
The Railway Parade. And then the other one would be installed not far after probably even before or just after First Ave.
So pretty much like in where one of the blisters in this location would be in the other one on the other side?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah. That's my first question. I'm not sure if it was the town or main roads had the SAM, the speed, other speed activation machines on the side of the road. Are they called the SAMs?
Yes, I think that's what they are.
Yeah. Any data from those, or why are they positioned in that, obviously, where these interactive signs are going to be? If you've had SAMs in there, like the speed monitoring devices in there before, what was the end result for that process or procedure when those machines were there? Did you get any data out of that?
Yeah, it was marginal. I suppose it's they're there as a bit of a reminder, and their effectiveness is marginal. Yes. Yeah.
So if things are marginal, I don't know, if I was in my business, marginal seems questionable. I'm not here to make decisions making tonight. I don't have much confidence in them. Are there any other road management ideas, if you've got everything carved up on Railway Parade at the moment, like any type of ongoing road treatments? I saw a bit of a Facebook meme the other day where the Romans had built cobblestone roads and they were still intact after 2,000 years, and there's been roads that have been manufactured by council and main roads and they get busted up after 6 months. Is there any other sort of thought process around different types of road treatments now that there's opportunity for that to be placed on Railway Parade, either in length or in chunks, other than, I suppose, the vertical raised projections that you had discussed earlier?
I would love to build roads like the Romans did. The reason they're in place is because the thickness is, they had heaps of stonemasons, and the thickness...
Keep going, I'm interested.
Jeez, I'm just getting history.
Loads of slaves.
The thickness of the stone is about 500 mil. And when we build, I'm not sure if you know, but if you recall, but outside Wellington Street train station in the city of Perth, they did some limestone pavement.
Yep.
And it was, designed by pavement engineers and doctors of engineering and all sorts of things, but we just don't physically have that thickness of paving. If we had a built and what happens is that I think it was about 80 mil, and that laminated and cracked and failed and got repaired constantly, and that there was talk about it's a sealant, it's this, it's that, it's the glue. It's the thickness of the limestone. So back in the day, these limestones were made 500 mil thick, and that will never move. And so we don't have that skill. We don't have those resources. We don't have that sort of money. But yes, if you did build limestone, that is a really good way to make people drive slowly. Yeah, because you have to drive like that. The vertical deflection devices.
Sorry.
The best ones are the rubber cushions. They are the most effective. And the reason that they're installed, that we did recommend them in the July report, is one, they're cheap. I think they're about 30 grand to install them at four locations. But their effectiveness is that they slow down cars but don't impact buses.
Yep.
So the buses straddle them, and the speed, and the cars can't. So then the cars have to slow down. So the speed cushions are... And I don't like putting in speed humps, but the speed cushions are the most effective form of speed control. And that will assist in treating some hoon behaviour as well.
Thank you. All my questions have been answered. Thank you very much.
So just following on from Councillor Ames' question, my understanding with speed humps in some other areas of the town is that there have been noise complaints about cars speeding over the humps. Certainly I've received complaints. Have the town received complaints about speed humps?
We've received a few, Madam Mayor. Yep.
Okay. I do have another question regarding the plans. Now, I drive down that street every single day, and the island type or median that's next to Second Avenue there, that is a point where cars slow down. But you're right, if they're hooning, they will just do a slight and race through that spot. So my question is, that island or median or whatever you'd like to call it seems to be wide enough to accommodate one tree. Would that be a possibility? Because clearly the visual thing of having a tree in the middle of the road growing in front of you tends to actually psychologically make you slow down. Would that be a possibility for that particular spot or not?
Madam Mayor, it is. Although, you know, the tree trunk might fit within in that median, we would need to dig out a much, much larger area to fit in, you know, appropriate soil so the roots do grow down rather than out into the pavement.
It's about twice the width of the ones down in
Shackleton.
Yeah, Shackleton.
Mm. Yeah.
So the width of that at its widest point is about twice the width of the ones down at Shackleton.
Yeah, but it's not as simple as just digging that out and putting the tree in. We would have to excavate a larger area, and that would be expensive, and we just, I suppose, address one spot, an isolated spot, rather than the length. But
that's one spot we're going to stop.
Yeah, it is something we can consider. Yeah,
I'm going to go back to a previous project just to ask the question. The Broadway Bike Path project, which was a state government project, in the original plans, they had indicated they were going to raise up that intersection of Railway Parade and Broadway, and I don't believe that ever happened. And that was designed to actually make it more interactive for pedestrians and also to slow down traffic. Was there any reason why they actually never filmed the criteria of that original project to raise that intersection up?
Sorry, Madam Mayor, I was unaware of that. But
it was in the early plans.
Right.
I can dig them out for you if you like.
That'd be great. Okay. Thanks.
any other questions? Councillor Plifka.
Just returning to the cobblestone treatment or similar. When we had the workshop, the representative from Creative Communities was talking about the Town Centre Master Plan and how on the Road, but a way in which to control people's speed might to have a textured road. And I think he gave the example of what they had done at Claremont Quarter to say that people will, when they feel vibrations through their steering wheel, regulate their speed as a result of that. Given that that's something which is foreshadowed in the Town Centre Master Plan, could we potentially apply that same technique, whatever that happens to be, to sections of railway and maybe try and get that sort of integration and have Old Perth Road sort of spill out into parts of the railway?
Yes, thanks, Councillor. Through you, Madam Mayor. Yeah, look, there are some different forms of texturing that we can use other than the big limestone blocks. Yeah, so there's probably I suppose when you do isolated lengths of say a few metres or 5 metres, it doesn't have the same impact as continuing people. It'll probably might encourage some people to go faster where they just glide over the top. But yeah, look, I think these sorts of things can there are many options that. Many different, I suppose, things that can be considered. We feel like we've considered, most of them in general, but there are more that we can consider, yeah.
Councillor McFadden?
Just a final question. I understand what Councillor Plifka is getting at there, but given that Broadway is currently undergoing resurfacing, it looks like it's almost finished,
it wouldn't
be a good option for this site.
No, it wouldn't be at this stage,
yeah.
But yeah. yeah, it is just a, I think they might have finished today or might be done in the next couple of days, but yeah.
So following on for that, I have one last question for me. With the officer's recommendation, if we proceeded with that officer's recommendation, would the staff consider reviewing that street in about a year or a year and a half and bringing back some information to council about the effectiveness or otherwise of this officer recommendation?
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Madam Mayor. Thanks for the question. That's a great point. I think it's always up for consideration, and we're probably it'd probably be a wise decision to start with the cheapest approach, and then keep working our way through it to see what works. But I suppose for us, in our roles, nothing's ever done. It's always considered. Okay. Yes, this is a solution that we're going to address, but these things are always under constant review, and because we will get the constant feedback. You know, if we put certain signage in or certain control measures in, we will get the feedback, and then that'll then come up for review and you know, further assessment and further review. And therefore, if it comes up for assessment, meets the criteria, comes back to council, we go through them.
Councillor Ames, you had one more.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And this is again to you, Mr. Adams. Prior to myself being on council, am I assuming correctly that you've recycled the Shackleton Street cushions to Anzac Terrace? Or are the ones at Shackleton Street now in the ether and they weren't recycled? Or are they floating around in your store shed and we can just punch them into the railway parade next week?
I don't believe they're in the store shed, but I haven't seen everything in the store shed. There are numerous things in the store sheds, but no, I don't. I think if they were available, I would know. My guys would have told me, but I can ask where the ones from Shackleton Street went.
Oh no, I'm just saying if they're you know, I think you mentioned there was about $30,000 for us to sort of, you know, complete that railway parade. If they were floating around, that'd be a pretty good cost saving to start the bat. And I would presume that those rubber road cushions can be recycled elsewhere. They just obviously are secure, bolted in, and they just move around.
Yeah, they're just bolted in.
Just on that, I think, Mr. Adams, you indicated last time this item came before us that the cushions don't last that long. Is that correct?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Mayor. That's correct. And I could imagine the ones in Shackleton Street, you know, which is does copper heavier traffic, would have they do deteriorate. Yeah. They do lose their strength.
Okay, with that, councillors, we'll move on to 8.8, draft town of Bassendean corporate business plan. Thank you.
Under the local government administration regulations, we're required to review our corporate business plan each year. So as part of the integrated planning and reporting framework, following the approval of the budget in late July, the executive team undertook a review of the corporate business plan to align it to the budget and also the resources of the local government. Last Thursday with councillors, we went through the corporate business plan, project by project. I don't intend on going through each of them tonight, but I'll have questions. Coming out of the workshop on Thursday, there were a couple of changes and points of clarity that I would like to point out. So on page 15 of the draft corporate business plan, the Mayor did ask the question in respect to that last project, assess and map the health of our existing trees to better plan for the future, to clarify whether that included our parks and reserves. Yes, that is the case, and so that is intended to happen over the next 2 years.
Thank you.
On page 17, prepare precinct structure plan for the Bassendean Town Centre. So that is spanning over 3 financial years. Now, whilst we're currently resourcing that project internally in terms of the planning and scoping, over the next 2 years, we will require a resource commitment from council to complete the precinct structure plan. So those filled in circles will become empty circles until council consider the budget. So these changes I'm mentioning, I will actually update in red font when they come to the OCM. Now, on page 28, the first project, establish a strategy to enhance partnerships, participation and engagement of Noongar people. I'd like to actually bring that forward to 21-22 and continue into 22-23. Now, there will be a resource commitment required of council for that initiative, so there'll be empty circles. I'm just waiting on a proposal for that, and we'll discuss further with council at the appropriate time. So there's the key points I would like to update for the purposes of the OCM, but I'm happy to take any questions.
Councillors.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I've just lost it. I think it's 1.3, which is around access and inclusion. I think it's on page... Sorry, I just scrolled down to page 28 to follow that last point.
Page
730
on mine.
Page 7. Thank you, Madam Mayor. We had a single item, a single project for that item, which is the winding up of the service. Would that suggest that we have no projects planned for the rest of the period to actually address that area?
So as part of our day-to-day operational services, we provide a plan and a report on disability access and inclusion each year, which is reported through our annual report. There is also a public health plan which is underway at the moment. So what we've actually done is tried to align some of the programs and activities to, the most closely aligned objective. So there may be other projects and actions in here rather than repeating them, which was, some feedback that we received from council in the last corporate business plan. Because then once the corporate business plan is approved, report on it, so whatever's in here then gets copied across, and it just made the quarterly report quite clunky.
That makes sense.
But each year, obviously, we look at initiatives that we can include, and whilst there may not be much in this section on top of our normal day-to-day operations, it's something that could grow next year if there was a particular project that council would like us to have.
Thank you. Just to clarify for the Disability Access and Inclusion Plan, you said it was in a separate section that was better aligned to me. Could you clarify which section that might be?
Oh, sorry. So at the front of the Corporate Business Plan, we've aligned our day-to-day services. So, and then with regards to the Corporate Business Plan, the specific objectives and actions and so on, these are on top of those day-to-day services. I did mention the public health plan, which is also in the corporate business plan, and that also looks at how we create a healthy, inclusive community.
So would the Disability Access and Inclusion Plan go up to 2024 from memory? Would the renewal of that not be considered a major project or action for inclusion?
I could certainly take that on notice and have a look at it. Yep.
Thank you.
Councillor McFadden?
Nothing very important. Just in the list of resolutions for deletion, there's the one in relation to the new local cat law and the reference...
That's the next item.
Oh, sorry. Is it on the bottom of the corporate business plan?
No, it's on the bottom of the quarterly report. That's the next.
Sorry. They look much the same.
Councillor Plifka.
Just on objective 2.5, so that's on page, what is that, 14 of that document, or 204 of the attachments. So that we're talking about value and conserve and protect our water resources and waterways. Do we need any project or action items there for what potentially could be happening with the Ashfield flats? Is that sort of something which we'll be getting involved with in a big way? Because obviously a lot of our streams and that all flow into there, so I'm just wondering if we will need budgetary allocation for that.
I think from a project action perspective, we could identify the fact that we are contributing to the governance group that will be involved in developing the response, and that's more at an officer level, so we could identify that as a separate project or action, but I will...
Thank you. There is already a separate corporate business plan action. It's under 2.4, though, to do with Ashfield Flats. So that's on page 10, the third from the bottom in that table. Partner with the state government to respond to Ashfield Flats hydrology study.
Page 13.
Sorry, where are you at?
Two or three. Page 13, 2 or 3.
Page 13. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess that covers it. I was sort of trying to think of the interaction between the two, because we were told that our drain's no good.
Yeah, the drainage. So I have a question about 2.5, which on the attachment is page 14 of 30.
Mm-hmm.
And I note that we've got in 2021 repurposed the open drain from 2nd Avenue to 3rd Avenue to prepare Living Stream. Then the next line we've got in 2022-23, repurposed the open drain between 3rd and 4th Avenue to prepare Living Stream Stage 2. Now, originally, the concept was that we would have 1 year of creating the planning, followed by another year, the next year, of implementation. So I know 23-24 doesn't have a hollow circle for planning, and 24-25 year doesn't have a hollow circle for implementation, because the implementation of the Living Stream projects was supposed to be a rolling program. So can you please advise me if we can incorporate this rolling program that we were talking about?
So one of the things we've identified, the last project or action, is to actually review the outcomes. So this is our first major Living Stream project within the town. And so the idea is that we would actually undertake a review of the outcomes of the Living Stream program to develop then a future program for the design and implementation of Living Streams. So that would occur
in 2022-23
next year.
Yep. Reviewing the outcomes doesn't necessarily mean that we have to stop a rollout. What it does is just tells us, directing us. But I would myself like to see the rolling program of works incorporated in there, so that we can look forward to actually doing a program on a continuing basis. So would you be able to look at that between now and the OCM?
Certainly, but it would be unfunded, so
it's a hollow circle.
So we can certainly incorporate.
Now, the other thing I noticed from the corporate business plan last year compared to this particular format is that we had measures of success in the previous corporate business plan, which we've got projects stroke actions. Any other questions? Okay. So we'll move on to 8.9, adoption of quarterly report period ending 30 September 2021. Now, I believe
believe Councillor McLennan had a question about a item for...
It's not important.
Okay. Any other questions, councillors? Okay. So we'll move on to item 8.10, accounts paid September and October. And I believe Councillor Ames, you might have had a question or two about this one.
Madam Mayor, no, it was just a reference regarding some of the payments that I saw and the figures attached to it for tree removal. And that was when I was just having a chat with Mr. Adams regarding what would be the approximate cost of the upcoming tree removal. Being the first time in council, it's very it's interesting to see sort of what the costs are for different types of aspects within the town. So I was just referring to that, but not a question. I've got no other further questions on that myself.
Any other questions, councillors? I have one that seems to be a recurring item in the payment figures. It's only a small amount, but it recurs, I think, every 2 weeks or every week. I'll give you one reference number, which is EFT 44300, and that is toilet hire charges at Ashfield Reserve, $1,190. I was just curious about the recurring nature of that charge, given that there are toilets down there. It doesn't seem to be tied to events, that's what I'm getting at. It might be tied to events, I don't know.
To you, Madam Mayor, I think that referred to the period that Ashfield Toilets was damaged by vandalism.
Okay.
And that we hired in a set of toilet blocks and toilets and... And it'd be a fortnightly hire for that set of $1,000.
People do love damaging toilets, don't they?
That is correct.
I'll leave it at that. Any others I'll forward through. So, which moves us on to item 8.11, financial reports. I don't know if you would like to speak to this, Mr. White.
Just very briefly, thank you, Madam Mayor, through you. So this is the purpose of this report is, as it says, for council to receive the monthly financial report. It's for 2 months for this particular council meeting, September, October. It's in a different format to what has traditionally been tabled to the previous council. And the format was reviewed to try and, I guess, tailor it more closely to what we think and hope councillors are looking for in the report, and we're certainly happy to take feedback on that. And also, in an effort to reduce staff time by perhaps producing every month voluminous financial material that perhaps wasn't particularly of interest to council. So, and I just wanted to make one other point in relation to this particular report. Also, for the first time in quite some since I've certainly been in town, we're proposing to make some budget amendments as part of the monthly financial report for October. They're set out in a table and reproduced in abbreviated form as part of the council, the Office of Recommendation.
Thank you for that, Mr. White. Councillors, questions? Councillor McLennan?
Just a couple. So in terms of the budget amendments, there's a new amount for the Ashfield Flats master planning of $11,560. Is this the work that the department is doing, and are we contributing to that?
Madam Mayor, I might take the first part of that question and I might pass over to Dave for the second part. But you might notice just on the officer recommendation, the first three of these items actually add up to $111,701, which is the total. So the first three of the items produce the total, and they were unspent budgets from last year's projects that should have been carried over and they weren't. The rest of the items in the officer recommendation are cost neutral. So in relation to the Ashfield Flats master planning, there's still some balance of grant funds remaining that needed to be carried forward. So it's recognising the expense to balance the grant funds out. But I'll hand over to David for the remaining response.
Through you, Madam Mayor. Yes, Renee, it's sorry, it's correct that it's the town's contribution towards the DBCA's master planning process.
Okay, thank you. And the other question I had is for you, Mr. White. I'm sorry to ask you about this yet again. The report under our monthly investment refers to only 51% of our funds being invested in non-fossil fuel organisations. Given that we had a motion several years ago now to divest wherever possible, it seems like it's a fairly ineffective resolution. And I understand what you said previously about the reclassification of some of the banks through market forces assessment. Is there any scope for us to do better?
Through, Madam Mayor, yes, I think there is. Firstly, Council's resolution on this
preference
is, it states that Council, along the lines, I can't remember it word for word, but it's on the lines of Council will invest in entities that don't lend to fossil fuel related interests, providing there's no financial disadvantage to Council. Now, there is always a financial disadvantage to Council because the interest rates are generally lower for those financial institutions. So there is a need for the administration to bring a policy to Council, and that's certainly something that we have started work on. But we need to do a little bit more before it's ready to bring to Council to try and put some parameters around that to make it a little bit more specific for officers to guide their investment decisions. In relation to this specific report being only 51%, the main reason for that is recent changes to the finance team, and that has resulted in us not being sufficiently advanced in our cash flow projections for the rest of the financial year, which consequently has meant that the bulk of our investments, short-term investments, are actually at call in our normal Commonwealth Bank account, and the Commonwealth Bank is not a non-fossil fuel lender. So that's primarily as a result at the moment of our sort of short to medium-term cash flow forecast, and just need to catch up a little bit.
So from that, do I understand that there will be a draft policy coming to Council at some stage that will try to capture the attention of Council better than what we've currently got?
Yes, through you, Madam Mayor. Yes, my intention is to bring a draft policy to Council with the aim of providing some parameters around the actual nature of the town's investments, and specifically to provide a tolerance that Council is comfortable with in relation to an interest rate percentile that will guide the town's investment decisions. So that's a judgment call, I think, that Council will need to make as far as setting that policy in those terms are concerned.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions from councillors? Councillor Palifka.
It is the rate setting statement, so it's on page 314 of the attachments. Have that?
Yes.
So just there, it's going through the net current assets start of the financial year. So you've got your year-to-date budget and the year-to-date actual. There seems to be a difference of 1.6 million. What is that? What's caused that to occur?
Thank you, through, Madam Mayor. There are a few differences. Obviously, the end of the year, it's an estimate at that time. And there were some contract liabilities that weren't taken up at the end of the financial year. So it's where we've essentially received money but haven't delivered services. So they need to be taken up after the end of the financial year. There's also some other deferred revenue and a lot of accruals needed to be made for works that were conducted in June but invoiced sort of towards the end of June. So there are quite a few in that category because our our budget was adopted a bit late last year too, which meant we were performing a lot of our capital works and operational projects, in fact, pretty late in the financial year. But I can certainly provide more details about that.
So it's just a lag between the reporting and when the costs were actually incurred?
Essentially, a lot of it is because, you know, the 30th of June is sort of a cut-off date for the purposes of reporting, but the business activity just continues. So a lot of it is a timing difference. That's right. It's not lost money, so to speak.
No, or it's not a write-down of an asset or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Don't mind. Could I ask that perhaps at an upcoming workshop we could have a discussion about the formatting of the financial reports? Don't wish to go into it in great detail tonight, but it would be worthwhile having a discussion about that in a, perhaps a workshop, if you don't mind. Would you be?
Certainly through you, Madam Mayor. I'm certainly happy to receive feedback to discuss the format, discuss the type of information council is seeking, and also, I guess, to note that we have planned a more fulsome budget on the financial reporting workshop for council. It's behind the queue in terms of planning and asset management and so on, so that's more likely to be early in the new year where we can go through financial side of the council's business in a little bit more detail with councillors.
Okay. Any further questions, councillors? Okay. So I think that brings us to the end of our agenda items, if I'm not wrong. And there are no motions of which previous notice has been given. There's no confidential business, so I'll declare this meeting closed at 8:25 p.m. Thank you, councillors. Thank you, staff.
You've
been very patient with our questions tonight.
I'm impressed that you went into the history of roads.
Don't get me started, Brenna.
Oh,
I'll just keep going.
I thought you were going to follow it up.
Incorporates architecture.